Hi, this is Katie Floyd, sitting in for the vacationing Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeed.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, August 29th, 2010, and this is show number 275. Well, did I get the intro right? Because I gotta tell you, I've been nervous about that introduction all week long. I mean, if I were to screw up somehow the introduction of the podcast, the grief that I would catch from Allison would never end. After all, every time I introduce Allison, I introduce her as Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast hosted at podfeet.com. So, I guess for the one or two of you who may not know me, I probably should introduce myself. My name is Katie Floyd. My regular gig is the Mac Power Users podcast that I co-host with David Sparks, and you can find that over at www.macpowerusers.com. We produce a podcast twice a month that takes on one particular Mac-related topic and focuses on it in depth. David and I are both productivity nerds, so we always try to focus on how to get things done with your Mac more effectively. I also get to hang out with Allison and the other guys over at the Mac Roundtable podcast, and you can find that over at macroundtable.com. So enough with the blatant self-promotion and on with the show. So as you probably know, Allison and Steve are off gallivanting around Europe, and we'll check in with them a little bit later in the show as we get to chit-chat across the pond. But for now, the microphone is mine, so I'm going to talk about whatever my heart desires. Of course, we'll keep with the theme of Allison's show, and it will continue to be a podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. So don't go changing the channel on me or anything. Allison even roped me into producing the live show, so I've got the chat room here to keep me company all night long while I record, and I have a feeling it will turn out to be an interesting evening. First up, I want to share with you my experiences using the Hulu Plus service, but before I can do that, I'm required to share with you a problem that has to be solved. Although I have a fairly inclusive home media center, including two HD TVs, an Apple TV, Netflix subscription, two TiVo HDs, and a DVD player, I still occasionally miss some content that I wish I hadn't. For example, this past season, my friends and family were raving about this television series called Modern Family. But I'm not usually one who goes for the sitcoms, so I brush them off. Besides, I don't have time to get involved in another regular television show. But they persisted, and they said that I just had to watch this show. And I told them I'd get around to it when the summer was over and I had more free time. Then, a couple of months back, my friend and fellow podcaster Chuck Joyner, also known as Allison's arch nemesis, asked me to join the Mac jury to comment about the new Hulu Plus streaming service for television and movie content. I was excited about the new offerings, especially considering the availability of the iPhone and iPad application. I knew about Hulu, but the service never really thrilled me because I thought it was a great way to pick up a missed episode or two here or there, but it was never really a reliable way to catch up on a series because the content offerings were really hit or miss. Hulu Plus promised to change all of that by offering more content for a small fee. I figured with most of my favorite shows being on hiatus for the summer, now would be a good time to give it a try, and as a bonus, the entire first season of Modern Family, the show my family had been pestering me to watch, was available. Getting started, I should mention there is no free trial of Hulu Plus. If you want access to the full catalog of the Hulu Plus shows, you need to plunk down $9.99 a month subscription fee from day one. For some reason, I had in my head that there was a free first taste, but apparently not. The iPhone and iPad apps are free downloads in the iTunes Store, and there are a few free shows available without the Hulu Plus plan that can give you an idea of the viewing experience on those apps. Hulu Plus aims to solve, for a monthly fee, what has long been seen as the many problems with the Hulu service. Hulu Plus gives you access to a larger back catalog of dozens of television shows, whereas the free service typically only gives you access to the most recent episodes or a handful of clips. Hulu Plus also gives you the ability to watch shows on an iPhone or iPad, options that aren't available with the traditional Hulu service because it utilizes Flash, and that's not supported on the iDevices. Although the collection of content available on Hulu Plus is superior to that available on the free Hulu service, it's far from comprehensive. For the popular Fox television series 24, all of the episodes of the most recent season 8 are available on Hulu Plus, but none of the episodes from the previous seasons are available. The same is true for another one of my favorite ABC shows, Castle. All 23 episodes of last season are available, but none of the previous season. On the other hand, there are 133 episodes available of ABC's Desperate Housewives, which appears to represent the entire run of the series to date. Older shows seem to do better, as there are 143 episodes available for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and 109 episodes of Ally McBeal. I guess it makes sense that the older shows have more availability, but it seems that the availability still varies between the networks. Both Desperate Housewives and Castle are current running ABC shows, yet one has the entire run available and one only has the last season. I don't understand why that is. Obviously, the usefulness of Hulu Plus to you is going to vary depending on the availability of the shows that you're interested in. In my case, most of my television content comes from shows I've recorded on my cable television provider through my TiVo. I love TiVo because I have the ability to time shift my content to fit my schedule, and I can buzz through the commercials. Using third-party software like iTiVo, I can transfer my recorded TiVo shows to devices like my iPhone and my iPad for watching on the go, although this is time-consuming and it's a process that requires some advanced thought. This captures about 90% of my media consumption needs, but occasionally I miss an episode I hear, or everyone is talking about a series that I missed. This is where I turn to other services to catch up. For the occasional missed episode, Hulu is an easy and free way to catch up, assuming the show is in Hulu's catalog and available for viewing. iTunes downloads are typically $1.99, and that's another option, but it can get expensive if you're buying more than a few at a time. Buying or renting entire seasons of DVDs to catch up is another option, but that can also be costly. So let's go to my Modern Family example. The first season isn't available yet for DVD, and the iTunes season pass costs $30 for standard def and a whopping $40 for high definition. That seems a little steep for a 30-minute comedy. And if I can catch up on the entire season over the course of a month with a $10 Hulu Plus subscription, I'm doing so at a third of the price of the iTunes standard def price. That sounds like a deal. The viewing experience on the iPad is surprisingly good. For most of my viewing, I've been streaming over my 802.11n time capsule, and even in areas with lower signal strength, I've experienced relatively few stutters in the video. My show starts almost immediately and continues uninterrupted at fairly full quality. The picture quality is quite good, crisp and clear, and just as good, if not better, than what I've seen from the Netflix application. I've also found that I've enjoyed the portability of the iPad for watching TV shows. I've used the iPad and Hulu Plus in places where I don't have a TV, like my kitchen and patio, so there are times when portability is a big plus. While you can browse shows within the app, it seems most convenient if you load shows up in advance into a queue. Because of the volume of shows available, it can make browsing through the shows a little cumbersome. Of course, there's also a search feature so that you can find what you're looking for. You can also browse through featured shows and clips and view what's popular. I've noticed the app is a little buggy on the iPad, but I think that has more to do with iOS 3.2 than anything else. Hulu Plus doesn't seem to like the iPad's notification system, and anytime I get a notification, my show is interrupted and the application will crash. But that doesn't happen on the iPhone, so that's what leads me to believe it's more of an incompatibility with 3.2. A mild annoyance, which hopefully will be corrected once the iPad is updated to iOS 4. Although there are commercials in Hulu Plus, I've only seen one 30-second ad per commercial break, which really doesn't bother me. Because I'm not bombarded with 3 to 4 minutes of commercials every break, I can finish my 30-minute show in just over 20 minutes. There's even an option within the Hulu preferences where you can provide some information and they'll try to tailor the advertisements a bit to your interests. For example, I've noticed that I tend to see more movie trailers, which I don't mind because I'm generally more interested in those. But I do see a lot of the same commercials over and over again, and my guess is it's because Hulu still has limited advertisers. Content between the web browser, the iPhone, and the iPad app stay in sync so that if you start watching a show on one device, you can pause and pick it up on another. You can also start watching video over a 3G connection, although it will be at lower quality and will vary depending on your connection. Especially if you've got one of those capped data plans, you'll want to be very careful when using this feature. Hulu Plus is also available on a number of other devices, including some TVs and Blu-ray players, as well as game consoles. but I don't have any other devices that will support it besides the iPhone, the iPad, and my computer. For me, the biggest downside of Hulu Plus is that I won't be able to watch TV where I want and when I want. The iPhone and the iPad are great mobile devices, but I've got a 42-inch plasma TV and a very comfortable couch, and I'd much rather watch content on the big screen than on my iPad propped on my lap. Hulu Plus on the iPad and the iPhone do not support the component or composite out cables to allow me to connect the devices to the TV. And hooking up to the computer is always an option, assuming you've got the right cables. But if you go this route, the best experience is the free Hulu desktop software, which allows you to control the Hulu interface and browse content with a remote. But unfortunately, that doesn't work yet with Hulu Plus content. And that was quite a surprise. You can still use the web interface, but the quality isn't great sometimes as the image scales up to accommodate the better screen. What would make Hulu Plus better? Several people have commented that for a pay service, they don't want to see ads in Hulu Plus. But that doesn't really bother me. I would like to see the Hulu Plus service available on more outlets, especially outlets that would let me watch Hulu Plus on my TV. For starters, Hulu Plus should work on Hulu's desktop application, and they should enable TV outlet output for their iOS devices. Hulu Plus integration coming to more set-top boxes and TVs would be a welcome addition, although I'm sure they're working on these deals. While the $9.99 price point isn't bad, it's not low enough to make me stay subscribed. I simply just don't use the service enough to justify for a $10 monthly subscription. But for $5 a month, I'd probably put it on auto debit and set it and forget about it. The Hulu Plus service works just about as advertised, although I'm a little disappointed with their catalog offerings. That being said, it didn't meet my needs well enough to continue to justify my membership beyond the first month. I want to watch my TV on my equipment the way I want, when I want. For the money and the convenience, my needs are just better met by my cable TV subscription and my TiVo. I can see Hulu Plus being something that I might occasionally buy for a month here or there for a specific purpose, but I don't see it being a continued monthly subscription. Then again, perhaps I'm accustomed to the high quality of living that my current setup offers me. While Hulu Plus may not be a perfect fit for me, I can see how the Hulu Plus service would be a good fit for others. For example, if I were a poor college kid right now, I would pay for Hulu Plus in a heartbeat. My freshman year of college, I lived in the dorms and didn't have cable, and I would have killed for a service like this. Likewise, if I was someone who traveled regularly and wasn't home enough to justify a costly cable or satellite service, Hulu Plus would probably make a lot of sense. For young adults or singles or those who don't watch a lot of television or people on fixed incomes, Hulu Plus, again, could make a lot of sense compared to a $50 or more monthly cable TV or satellite subscription. Of course, you do have to have high-speed internet connection and a device to watch the Hulu Plus content. So all right, here we go, bottom line time. As a supplemental service, Hulu Plus didn't cut it for me enough to justify it for continued use. But I can see it being useful for the occasional purchase of a month or two if you wanted to catch up on a specific series that was available. But I don't think long-term it fits well into my lifestyle. Although the catalog is larger than the free Hulu offerings, it's still not comprehensive enough to justify the price. Lack of options to watch the service on a big screen TV is also a major disadvantage. That being said, Hulu Plus is still in its infancy, and it's in an invite-only beta. So it's a service that has great potential to grow over time. And while it's a service that may not fit into my lifestyle, it may fit very well into others. I don't think it works well as a cable or satellite supplement. But perhaps it worked better if you're looking for a cable or satellite replacement service where you have none. In which case, I would encourage you to carefully analyze your usage and compare that to Hulu's offerings. Well, now I'm going to turn the show over to a special guest contributor with a look at the note-taking app Notarize.
Well, hi, Katie. How are you doing this week? Hope you're holding up okay. Hope the chat room is being nice to you. I know Mara promised that she would keep the boys in line, so I hope that's all working out for you. Well, I thought I'd make your job just a teeny bit easier by sending in a review of my own for the show while I'm gone. Research assistant Niraj and I have been on a quest for the perfect note-taking app for the iPad. I've talked about a few before, but we've started expanding the requirements well beyond typing and storing documents. We decided to be a real note-taking app. You have to be able to scribble drawings and diagrams in your notes as well. Think about how you take notes on paper. They're rarely just text, right? Well, this week, I found another app in a long lineup. Not sure if it's the cat's meow yet, but let's take a deep look at Notarize from Notarize.com. It's spelled weirdly. It's N-O-T-E-R-I-Z-E. So if you're in landscape mode, Notarize starts with a large pane on the right where you take your notes and a vertical column on the left where you can see the different notes listed. You can hide that sidebar with a quick tap, which lets you have all of the screen real estate for taking your notes and drawing. If you work in portrait mode, the default is to hide that sidebar, but you can bring it up as kind of a floating sidebar with a single tap. None of this is unusual, not until you actually start writing notes do you notice what Notarize can do that other apps can't do. Notarize lets you type on the yellow-lined paper very precisely, which is no big trick, but you can change font on the fly as well. Across the top of the page, you can select a pen and just start drawing any old place. You can change the line width and the color. Another tap, and you can switch to a highlighter, again with the different colors. Of course, an eraser is at your fingertips as well, and again, you can change the size of that. I mentioned that you can type on the lines, but you can also tap the T in the menu bar and then drag a box on the screen and you get new options. You can instantly make a colored sticky note that really jumps out on your drawing slash text note. You can, of course, change the colors of your sticky notes, and you can actually take your sticky notes and use your fingers like a pinch to zoom to rotate them as well, so they kind of look like you slapped them carelessly on the page. It did take me a while to figure out how to purposely make it look carelessly stuck on. Like I said, just use your fingers to rotate the text box. I found it a little bit tricky to mess with in that mode. It was easy to kind of change the shape and things like that, so it was a little bit harder to use than I would have liked. While you're using Notarize for the first time, there are constant pop-up help messages. I actually love that, because instead of reading a manual, you know, like I'd ever do that, the help messages come right up when you need to learn how to do something. One amazingly cool thing you'd never guess you could do came to me in one of those pop-ups. Let's say you wanted to take a screenshot of something in a web browser and paste it into one of your notes. You've got the web page up in Safari, starting with HTTP. The way you work with this is really, really weird. You go into the HTTP and you change it to be NHTTP. Instantly, that Safari window moves out of the way, it opens up in Notarize, and then it flips it into an embedded browser. Kind of graphically flies in. It's kind of cool. So now what do you do with it? Down at the bottom left is a button that says Web Snap. Tap that, drag across the web page where you want your screenshot, and it plops that image right into your note where you can drag it around to your heart's content. While I was testing this part of for the review, one of those little help messages popped up, pointing out to me that some websites recognize the mobile Safari browser and so change themselves up for the iPad. Get this, they have a user agent switcher built into Notarize, so you can click the desktop button in the help pop-up, and it'll spoof a desktop browser so that you get the full website instead of the, you know, mobile Safari version, because maybe you want to show what it looks like in the real version. Unfortunately, that didn't actually work when I tried it. I might have just been a spaz that day, you don't know, but I was all excited anyway. Notarize lets you save favorite fonts so you don't have to hunt through all the fonts to find the one you like. I had some trouble figuring out a few things, but I wrote to the developers and got answers back right away. One thing that wasn't obvious to me was how to scroll up and down on a typed page. When you choose the T to start typing text, the keyboard pops up and it puts the insertion point at the end of the existing text on that page. But what if you want to edit something at the top of the page? Robert, the developer, explained to me that there's two methods. Each time you touch the text at the top of the viewable area, it'll bring down some more lines. That was kind of slow, but at least workable. Then he explained that if you have Notarize in landscape view, you can use your finger to scroll the page by dragging in the far left margin. I tried that, and it worked perfectly. That wasn't a big issue because every page in Notarize is sort of standalone, like a collection of notes, so you don't get to sent to the end of the document or anything. But I think it would have been good to have one of those little help pop-ups saying to scroll the page, drag in the left margin. One problem with drawing with your fingers is that they come out huge on virtual paper. I've done this with a lot of different applications, and you can, you know, draw a box in a circle and you've used up the whole page because it's got the whole page on screen. Well, Notarize solves this by letting you pinch and zoom so you can zoom way in and then draw, and you can create these fine little sketches but still use your big, clumsy, fat fingers. Notarize was designed with the idea of working with existing documents. Like, let's say you're given a PowerPoint document for somebody's presentation. Okay, you don't really want a PowerPoint document, but let's just say theoretically that were to happen to you. You can import that into Notarize and then make sketches, type little post-it notes, that sort of thing, to annotate the document while you're listening, or maybe you're editing it for somebody you want to tell them, hey, I think you're being stupid right here, or that sort of thing. I think this is a really cool use of the tool. It works with both with PDFs and PowerPoint documents, but Notarize, oddly enough, won't open up plain text files. Not sure why. I forgot to ask Robert if that's in the works or outside of the intended use of Notarize. The one downfall of many of the notes applications for iPad is the lack of good export options. I like the application PaperDesk, but you can only transfer them around through mypaperdesk.com. There are some documents I don't mind putting on the web, but what if you have some documents that you'd rather not have in a public space? You have no choice but to share all of them or none of them. You can't mail them, save them as PDFs, no other choices. This is where Notarize really shines. If you click the Share button, you're queried for which pages you want to share. This is way cool because maybe you only have some comments on one page of the PDF, or maybe you wrote a bunch of text notes, but it's the drawing on page 7 that you really need someone to see. You touch each page you want to share, and then you're given a choice of email, Google Docs, Facebook, Twitter, Box.net, Dropbox, your Docs folder, or Open In. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not too keen on sharing my PDFs with my Facebook or Twitter friends, but all the other options are things I would very likely use. Oh, I almost forgot to mention that you can actually record audio with your documents too, but those become separate files when you share them. The rest ends up in a PDF file when you share it out. That makes perfect sense, right? The only complaint I can really come up with on Notarize is I think the mapping of the button seems a bit off. I have to tap a couple of times before I get them to respond, and I think you have to click slightly below, or at least that's been my experience. I made a little video for Robert to show him what was happening and how I was having trouble getting the key clicks to work perfectly. He said he hasn't had that heard that from other people, so maybe I'm just being a spaz, but I did have a fair amount of trouble with that, enough that I think it does need some modification before I'd give it 100% approval rating. So bottom line time, I think Notarize might become my note-taking application of choice on the iPad. I'm going to see how it goes for the next few weeks and see if I stick with it. Again, I do think they need to work on the tapping to get it lined up exactly right. Notarize is available for a grand total, hold on to your chairs, of $3 in the iTunes store. And again, remember the spelling is Notarize, NOTERIZE. If you have a note-taking app for the iPad that blows your dress up, hey, do us a review and I'd love to hear it. Well, Katie, I'm afraid it's back to you. Get back to work.
Well, thanks, Allison. You think maybe she was afraid I wouldn't know what to do with myself for an entire podcast or something? Well, not to worry. Allison made sure to leave me with tons of documentation on how to produce a live show, upload to WordPress, set up her feed with Feeder, and all kinds of the wacky things that she does. And what application did she use to do all of this creative documentation for me? You guessed it, ScreenSteps. Allison created a fully annotated 263-page tome with all of the ins and outs of producing a podcast. Sheesh, you would think that I've never done this before or something. Okay. Well, in reality, it was only 35 pages, but, you know. The ScreenSteps documentation was easy to follow and made my job a whole lot easier. And Allison has made a ScreenSteps believer out of me, but I'm not the only one. So here's George to tell you a little bit about how Allison made a ScreenSteps believer out of him, too.
Hi, Katie. I'm George from Tulsa, with thanks from the Podfeet gang for hosting NoSillaCast while Allison and Steve are off spending Kyle's and Lindsay's inheritance. Katie, you're a great pod star. So hosting NoSillaCast, the podcast, will be a light workout. But having watched Allison and Steve do NoSillaCast live on Ustream, you're a brave warrior to take that on with the Sheridans somewhere in Festung Europa. I'm betting you're glad to have Allison's ScreenSteps tutorial she made to show all the weird stuff, she does to produce the show. Allison long ago made a Screen Steps believer out of me. Well, Allison and the DeVores at Blue Mango Learning Systems. Urged on by Allison, I downloaded the free trial and immediately blew it up. Yep, that's me, bomb-throwing anarchist. Please don't tell the Oklahoma Bar Association. Allison asked what I thought of Screen Steps, and I told her. The next week, the Screen Steps gang had fixed the program. Betcha that wouldn't happen at the HAL 9000 computer company. In fact, I know it wouldn't. I know a HAL employee who longs for a tool like Screen Steps to communicate to India how to do relatively simple tasks. Screen Steps would certainly make that process work better. A second thought. Let's keep that quiet. Screen Steps runs on Mac and HAL-type PCs. I've used Screen Steps to teach coworkers and friends how to use their Macs, to screen capture broker transactions and bill pay actions. I've used it to show how I wanted a legal document executed. Screen Step that lease, and the corporate secretary will never again have an excuse for not attesting. Maybe the greatest frustration I've had with Screen Steps is the inability to use it to show how to work Screen Steps. When you're making a Screen Step screen grab, the entire program steps off screen. But I beat that just today by opening Screen Steps on both my laptop and desktop and using screen sharing from the laptop to capture steps on the desktop. Easier than it sounds, and I'm sending along the tutorial I made on how to use Screen Steps. Blue Mango generously licenses users, not computers. That means you can install the same legal version on multiple computers, even Mac and HAL 9000s. That means the DRM police won't be coming for me since I made the declaration against interest here that I use Screen Steps simultaneously on two computers. Click through Allison's link at www.podfeet.com to try Screen Steps free for 30 days. And when you decide to buy, enter the code NOSILLA to save 25%. Screen Steps does way more than I can describe, and has features I've not even tried. Browse the website at screensteps.com for lots more than I've been able to tell you here.
As you may have heard, I'm a big fan of Mac user groups. In many ways, Mac user groups and podcasts have a lot in common. Both are Mac users who are trying to get together and share knowledge of the geeky things that they enjoy with other users. Of course, one of the benefits of Mac users group is that you actually get to interact with real-life people. As the host of a podcast, I'm privileged that I get the opportunity to interact with a lot of my listeners, sometimes in real life, sometimes in Ustream chat rooms, but more often than not through their feedback to my various shows. However, as a listener to a podcast, unless you're in the Ustream chat room tonight, sometimes you lack some of that direct social interaction. So I would like to take this opportunity to encourage all of you to investigate local Mac user groups in your area and check out a meeting or two. You can find a directory of your local Mac user groups over at Apple's website, apple.com/usergroups, or Chuck Joyner, there's that name again, Allison's going to kill me, also runs a resource site for Mac user groups called the Mug Center over at mugcenter.com. But a couple of things happened at my most recent Mac user group meeting that I thought would be worthwhile mentioning in this show. First off, one of our long-term members came up to me and mentioned that she had heard that I was substitute hosting the NoSillaCast while Allison was away on vacation. She went on and on and on and on for like 20 minutes about how amazing Allison was and how much she loved the podcast and hearing about Allison's various adventures in car waxing and Honda Bob stories. But yet, she didn't say a single word about Mac power users, so there's that. But anyway, I just thought it was worth mentioning, and a special shout-out to anybody from Mac people who may be listening tonight. Another thing that happened at my Mac users group meeting is that one of the members brought in several old Apple Airport Express base stations to sell. These were the older BG models, and he was selling them for the ridiculously low price of only $20 each. He was looking to upgrade his old network to 802.11n and only, and just wanted to get rid of the old hardware. He had three to sell, and in retrospect, I kind of wish I had bought them all, but ended up coming home with only one. Still, $20 for an 802.11g Airport Express is a great deal, and another reason you should check out your local MUG. This got me thinking about all the uses for an Airport Express base station. For $99, this little device does quite a bit. Let me tell you a little bit about the setup of my network and the various problems to be solved. I live in a fairly large two-story condominium with a third-level rooftop terrace. My primary router at home is the Time Capsule, which is basically a glorified Airport Extreme base station with a hard drive built in for wireless backup. The Time Capsule is connected to my cable modem, and after much debate, I decided to locate the Time Capsule in my living room rather than my home office. The rationale for this was that I actually had more internet-connected devices in my living room than I did in my office. In the living room, I have a TiVo HD that I use to stream high-definition videos off of Netflix and Amazon, as well as an Apple TV that I regularly download high-definition content and podcasts from the iTunes store. I now also have an AT&T 3G micro cell that rebroadcasts the AT&T signal so I can actually make a phone call from my house. My living room is centrally located, so it has an open loft and it provides a pretty good location for my micro cell and my airport to cover my entire house. The only problem is that I sometimes lose my signal when I'm sitting up on my third-story rooftop terrace, which is a bit of a pain because when the weather is nice, I like to work up there. The only problem with this setup is that my computer isn't actually connected via an Ethernet cable. And I was a little concerned about this at first because we all want the fastest speed possible for our computer. However, 802.11n seems to be sufficiently fast on my cable internet connection that I don't notice any slowdowns. Given the fact that I want the fastest connection possible, I wanted to get rid of every 802.11b and g device on the network. The Time Capsule already helps because it has the ability to run simultaneous dual-band network, so that my N devices can run on a 5 GHz network segregated from my G devices that run on the slower 2.4 GHz network. And as you may know, whenever you connect a B or G device to a network, you slow down the speed of the entire network. My dual-band router helps solve this problem because the B and G devices only connect on the 2.4 GHz network, which leaves everything running on the 5 GHz network untouched. The only thing left in my house that was running on the 802.11g was my upstairs TiVo HD. After giving a little bit of thought to this situation, I realized that an Airport Express would solve this problem. My master bedroom is located on my second floor, which is still in good range of my Time Capsule base station, but it's also right below that rooftop terrace where I have trouble sometimes getting signal. In that master bedroom, I have a flat-screen TV that is connected to a TiVo HD. But remember, that TiVo is connected to that 802.11g wireless adapter, that slowest device on my network. I was already using an 802.11n Airport Express in my bedroom to stream music via an AirTunes to an iHome clock radio, but I figured with a little rejiggering of my network, I could take that Airport Express that I was already using in the room anyway and serve a couple of different purposes. You see, an Airport Express can serve several different functions, many at the same time. It can extend a wireless network, so for example, if you don't have coverage on one end of your home, you can simply put an Airport Express somewhere between your base station and your dead zone, and your signal will bounce from your router to your Airport Express and then be relayed to cover your dead zone. Additionally, you can use an Airport Express to stream music via AirTunes to any connected speaker system, so you can listen to the music that's on your iTunes library through your speakers. Using a third-party application like Airfoil, you can use that Airport Express to stream any audio source from your Mac. And this is particularly useful if you want to stream any kind of internet audio that's not in iTunes. Another little known feature of an Airport Express is that you can also use it to connect an Ethernet-enabled device to a wireless network. In my case, my TiVo has an Ethernet port. And the Airport Express has one Ethernet port that can either be used to accept a signal from, say, your cable modem and rebroadcast that out over a wireless network. Or the airport can join or accept the signal from another wireless network and feed that signal through the Ethernet port to a connected device. Because the airport is 802.11n, it will do so at speeds that are significantly faster than my old 802.11g TiVo wireless adapter. This means that my shows transfer to the TiVo faster and my streaming is smoother and higher quality. Now, the TiVo doesn't have any kind of onboard diagnostics that tell me exactly how fast it is, but I can tell you just in my test from transferring shows back and forth from one TiVo to another or downloading movies, it's a lot faster than it was before over my old G adapter. Putting these three functions together, a single Airport Express solves three major problems. First, it allows me to get rid of my only 802.11g device in my home by getting rid of that TiVo wireless network adapter, and it allows me to connect my TiVo HD to a much faster wireless end network. Sure, I could have gone out and spent 70 plus bucks on TiVo's wireless end adapter, but the Airport Express does so much more. It also extends my wireless network up to my rooftop terrace, so now I have no problems using my MacBook Pro while lounging under the sun in my recliner. And lastly, I can stream music to my bedroom, although instead of using the speakers on my iHomeClock radio, I'm now using the speakers built into my television. Three problems solved, one device. I'm also using a second Airport Express in my home to wirelessly share a printer. Because of the setup of my office, my printer is on a credenza behind me, and running a cable from my desk to the printer would be quite cumbersome. Because I have a notebook computer, I'm frequently using the computer from places other than my desk, like that rooftop terrace that I mentioned, and I like to be able to print wirelessly documents from anywhere in the house. The Airport Express makes that possible, and it also lets me share my printer with guests who I've allowed access to my network. Additionally, I'm using the same Airport Express to stream music over AirTunes to a pair of connected Audio Engine A2 speakers that are on the same credenza, and likewise would also be a pain to run cables to my Mac. Are you noticing a trend that I don't like wires? Now, about that spare Airport Express that I picked up for 20 bucks at my Mac user group meeting. Keep in mind that it's 802.11g, and we've already established that I've gone to a lot of trouble to get all those 802.11g devices out of my home network, so it's not connecting to my network. But that doesn't mean I can't put it to good use. In October, I plan on meeting Allison and Steve in Las Vegas to attend my very first Blog World, and I'm planning a bit of an experiment and not traveling with my MacBook Pro. This will be my very first trip iPad only. It's only going to be 4 days, so I figure I don't have that much to lose. While most hotels offer some kind of in-room Wi-Fi, if you can get a wired Ethernet connection in your room, it's far superior to flaky hotel Wi-Fi. Of course, devices like the iPhone can't connect to a wired Ethernet connection, and that's where the Airport Express comes in. I've pre-configured the Airport Express at home to accept a signal and rebroadcast that signal on its own network using my own wireless security for protection. Therefore, anytime I travel and my hotel provides me with a wired Ethernet connection, all I have to do is plug in my Airport Express, connect up the wire, and I've instantly created my own in-room network with all the benefits of Wi-Fi without having to share it with the entire hotel. Because the Airport Express is going to live in my travel bag, it's really not that big of a deal to me that it's only 802.11g. So there you have it. $99 new from Apple, or in my case, $20 for the used airport. You get a multi-purpose device that can be used to extend a network, stream music, share a printer, create a wireless network, or connect an Ethernet-equipped device to a wireless network. Not bad, huh? Next up, we have a review from Bob DeGrant of a Podcatcher app for the iPhone called Podfisher. Here's Bob to explain how it works.
Hello, this is Bob DeGrand, and I'm reviewing an app for iOS called Podfisher, which is a podcasting app which sells for $2.99 in the App Store. I recently took a trip where I brought only my iPad, leaving my MacBook home, but I was concerned about being able to listen to new episodes of podcasts without another computer to sync to. I didn't want to have to remember the names of the dozens of podcasts I listened to and search the iTunes store for new episodes of each one individually. With Podfisher, you register the name of each podcast that you want to listen to once, and then you can tell it to search for new episodes of all the podcasts at once, or you can still search for new episodes of individual podcasts. There is a search function, so you can do a search for, say, Mac, and then check off each of the podcasts that you want to subscribe to that have Mac in their title. What Podfisher won't do, presumably to save bandwidth, is to automatically download all new episodes. You have to decide individually which episodes you want to download. As always, if the podcast is larger than 20 megabytes, you can't download it over 3G. You still have the option to stream it, or you can download it using Wi-Fi. Downloading is done through iTunes, which is a little clunky, but I think this should improve when iOS 4 comes out for the iPad. I had tried a number of other podcatcher applications, but hadn't found them reliable or stable enough to use on a regular basis. When I first started using Podfisher, it locked up on me, and I wound up emailing the developer, and we wrote back and forth about four times over a two-day period. And in the course of this email, I discovered that the problem was actually on my end. It had nothing to do with Podfisher at all. It was a more severe problem, which eventually required a complete restore of my iPad. The support from the developer was excellent. Even after I told him that I had solved the problem, he still wanted me to email him the change logs to see what happened and so he could avoid future similar problems. Overall, I found Podfisher to be a very good solution for listening to podcasts on the road, and in one respect, it actually had an advantage over using my MacBook in that you could download at least smaller podcasts over 3G. Podfisher will run on the iPhone and iPod Touch as well as the iPad. It is not a native iPad app. It will run in 2X mode on the iPad, but it looks fine. It's not really a graphics-intensive app, and it doesn't affect performance at all.
Well, Donald Burr is up next, and he reviews the Square mobile credit card payment system. Now, this is a system that I saw demoed at Macworld, but I haven't actually seen it in real life, so I'm curious to hear what Donald has to say.
Hey there, Allison and or Katie. This is Donald from Talking About Podcast, here with another of my famous reviews. This time, I'm reviewing the Square credit card payment acceptance system. Now, you might be asking yourself, why would I want to accept credit card payments? I mean, after all, credit card payment processing has historically been out of reach of mere mortals, requiring you to get a merchant account, high fees, all sorts of things like that. Well, what if you're a small business person? Maybe you make something, like you grew up in the 60s on the commune and you learn how to make baskets. Maybe you want to start selling those. Or maybe you're an independent contractor. In my case, I do a little computer consulting on the side, and it would be nice to be able to accept credit card payments from my clients. Or maybe you're just sick of being out with friends, and when you go out to eat somewhere, they always go, "Well, I can't pay you back for my portion of the meal. I don't have any cash on me." What if you could tell them, "Hey, I take credit cards." And yes, this works for debit cards as well. Sure, there's other solutions out there. You could get a merchant account and pay high monthly fees and buy one of those credit card terminal dealies, but who wants to do that? There's also services like PayPal, Amazon Payments, Google Checkout, that sort of thing. But a lot of those are kind of hinky, they're hard to use, they charge a lot of fees as well. And, well, let's face it, PayPal isn't exactly high on most people's customer service appreciation lists. Well, there's a new game in town, a company called Square, who was founded by Jack Dorsey, one of the co-founders of a little service we call Twitter. He created the Square service with the aim to put the power of credit card processing within the reach of mere mortals like us. It consists of an app available for iPhone, iPod Touch, iPad, and Android phones, as well as a small device that plugs into your device's headphone jack. This small device, I mean, it's really small, it's like less than an inch on all sides, is, believe it or not, a credit card swiper. So yes, you can actually swipe credit cards just like the big boys. Anyways, here's what you do. You plug in this swiper, you run their app, you enter the amount that you want to charge someone. You can also type in a description like gift basket or my portion of lunch the other day, you know, that sort of thing. And you either swipe their credit card or you can also hand enter their card number if, for example, the swiper doesn't work or maybe you forgot to bring your swiper with you. Then you hand your device over to the customer. He or she verifies that the payment is what he or she wants to pay and he signs his name on your device. Now, here's a great use for those fancy pogo stylus thingies, or you could always carry a sausage or a cheese stick on you, I suppose. When the transaction is all said and done, they get a nice emailed copy of their receipt showing what they paid for and the amount. The iPad version of the software is even cooler. You can actually create little shelves full of pre-made items. So, for example, if you make baskets, you have like 5 different styles. You can create an item preset for each style and just tap on one of them to instantly fill in all the details, price and picture and so forth. Every week, Square takes the money that you've earned and direct deposits it into a bank account of your choosing. And I mean normal, average Joe checking accounts. You don't need some special fancy merchant bank account or anything like that. You can go online to the Square website anytime to check your current balance and the status of your recent transactions. And for you Excel weenies, I'm looking at you, Allison, you can even download a CSV file that you can analyze and pivot tableize or whatever to your heart's content. Now here's what I like about this service. It's really cheap. Both the app and the card reader are completely free. Seriously. And their per transaction fees are also really reasonable. If you're able to swipe someone's card, it's only 15 cents plus 2.75% of the amount that you charged. If you have to hand enter their card, it's a little bit more, 15 cents plus 3.5%. But this is by far cheaper than most other payment methods out there, including PayPal and all those guys. And unlike most credit card payment systems, there is no monthly fee for using Square. Unfortunately, however, there are a few cons. There's some feature disparity between the various versions of the Square program. For example, the iPad version has that cool thing where you can predefine lists of items and stuff. Of course, that makes sense for the iPad because, you know, you have a bigger screen to deal with there. But for smaller screens like the iPhone and Android, I could see them making a little thing where you could just make a little textual list of items that you could pick from. Also, the iPhone version lets you take a picture using the camera and attach it to your transaction. So, for example, if you're selling something, you can take a picture of it that'll show up on their receipt. The Android version does let you attach a picture that you've already taken, but it won't let you actually take a picture using the Android phone's camera. So hopefully they'll equalize all the features between their various platforms. I did have a problem using the Android version of the app on my HTC Evo 4G. When I plugged in the card reader, it kept buzzing at me saying that it couldn't read the card, even if I didn't try swiping a card in. However, I contacted them, and they're aware of this problem, and they're working on it, and they provided me with a workaround that actually works, so I am able to use it for now. Receipts are only delivered via email, which is great for most people, but it would be nice to be able to print out a receipt, you know, for like if you're at a trade show or something and, you know, some people may just want to rather have a printed receipt. Of course, this means that you'd have to have printing support in the iPhone OS and the Android, but I hear that's coming, so maybe they're working on it. These are all fairly minor issues. A somewhat less minor issue is that currently they have a fairly low per-transaction limit, currently at $100. They do increase them periodically, and I hear if you ask them really nicely, they'll increase yours. Of course, this is fine for many small businesses, as well as if you're just, you know, getting money from friends. But for some people, a $100 limit may be too low. They have to impose these relatively low per-transaction limits because they're still a relatively small startup, and they don't have a whole lot of backing money yet. And therein lies another problem. They're really slow. I signed up for my Square account in April, but I didn't receive my card reader until just this past weekend, August 21st. And I hear that there are still a few people that signed up back in April or before then, even, that haven't yet received their card readers. They had some issues both in manufacturing these card readers as well as setting up insurance underwriting to protect them. But it looks like these efforts are finally starting to pay off and people are starting to receive their card readers. Still, if you sign up today, it might still take a little while for you to get your reader. Unfortunately, their communications in terms of customer service, you know, responding to questions and stuff, has been a little bit flaky. Again, I'm giving them a little slack here because they're a startup, and it looks like they're finally starting to hire more people, and the customer service is improving. Overall, however, this is still a great service, perfect for any small business person, perfect for anyone, really. Find out more and sign up at squareup.com and look for their app in the iTunes or Android app stores. Hope you enjoyed the review, and see you next time.
Well, Donald is in the chat room tonight and asked me to mention that since he's recorded that audio comment, that there is no more $100 limit on transactions, so that's good. However, after I heard Donald's review, I was very interested in this application, so I went and downloaded the application, but I couldn't do anything with it. They seem to have put yet another hold on shipping the credit card dongles and have given no information on when they'll be able to ship it again. Apparently, the company is still trying to get their ducks in a row with regards to financing, insurance, or some other way to handle chargeback, so they couldn't tell me when I would actually get my hands on the credit card reader. On top of that, I was a little put off by all the hoops that they wanted me to jump through and the information they wanted me to provide to actually get the thing. Among other things, they wanted my social security number and said that they would be running a credit check. I just don't remember having to jump through any kinds of these hoops to open my PayPal account, but maybe they're doing things a little differently. I'd love to give someone business other than PayPal, but the whole thing made me feel a little uncomfortable, especially since there was no kind of information on when I'd actually be able to begin accepting credit card payments. So I'm going to hold off doing anything until the product is actually shipping again and we'll see how things shake out. But I'm glad it's working well for you, Donald. Well, I'm very excited to have a contribution from one of my dearest podcasting friends, Corey Searins of the Max Sliders podcast. Corey's podcast focuses on sliders who have to slide back and forth between Mac and PC platforms, and he's here to discuss some software with a funny name, but that makes virtual machines easier to deal with.
Hi, this is Corey from the Mac Sliders podcast, helping users slide back and forth between their beloved Macs and the PCs they have to use at work. For those of you who listen to the podcast, you know that virtual machines is a big part of my normal job and that I live inside of them on a daily basis. In episode 4 of Mac Sliders, I discussed how to change the various boot options of your virtual machine so that it was easier to start up from a CD, an ISO image, or the network. Something missing from these options, whether you're using Fusion, Parallels, or VMware Workstation for the PC, is booting to a USB key. This option is non-existent in any of these versions. Recently, this is something I needed in the worst way to test out unattended installations and different tools that are easier to use on a USB key. Well, plop Boot Manager to the rescue. This freeware ISO, which you can find at www.plop.at, allows you to select it as the boot media for a CD. After downloading and unzipping the file, you'll be interested in the ISO titled plpbt.iso. First, make sure that you have a USB adapter assigned to your VM. Then go to the CD portion and select the plpbt.iso as the CD ISO image. This Linux boot manager takes approximately 5 seconds to load, and you'll be brought to a menu to allow you to select whether or not you want to boot from a floppy drive, CD-ROM, or a USB key. Use the down arrow key to select USB. Make sure that your USB key is connected and press Enter. In seconds, you are now going to be booting from a USB key. This will work great with tools like UBCD for Windows, ActiveDisk, or even AVG's free virus scanner, and much more. If you'd like to hear about more ways to make it easier to slide back and forth between your Mac and a PC, or have questions on how-tos, tune in to MacSliders.com. Until next time, be safe out there.
Now, I don't have a Honda or an Acura, but I do know that they're good cars, and I'll consider it one next time I'm in the market. I do have a 1997 Toyota Avalon, so I understand the importance of regular maintenance and keeping up with your cars can help you ensure a long life and many years of service. But I do have a confession to make. I've been neglecting some of my routine maintenance on my Toyota for the past couple of weeks. Yeah, maybe months. It's nothing major, so don't worry. But the reason I've neglected it is because it's so inconvenient to take your car into the shop. I mean, you practically kill your entire day sitting in a yucky waiting room with bad coffee and magazines that are 2 years out of date. And then there's the smell. And that's just not how I want to spend my weekend. You think those places have Wi-Fi or someplace comfortable that I can actually get some work done? No way. Try to get maintenance done during the week, and you're going to have to beg a ride from one of your coworkers. Funny story about this, actually. My boss recently was getting her car repaired and called her assistant from the shop to come pick her up. Well, the assistant's car was in the shop too, so she wasn't driving her regular vehicle. This car pulled up that my boss assumed was her assistant, and she hopped right on in. And guess what? It wasn't her assistant. They were both mortified, and they quickly scrambled out of the car, and the folks at the repair shop started laughing at them once they realized what was going on. Well, if I drove a Honda or an Acura, and if I lived in the LA or Orange County area, I wouldn't have to worry about things like this. I would never have to schedule my day around car maintenance. I wouldn't have to dread sitting in that yucky waiting room with the bad coffee and the funny smell. I wouldn't have to worry about accidentally jumping in some stranger's car while waiting for my ride to work. And all the while, I would be lounging in the comfort of my home with the peace of mind knowing that my vehicle was being taken care of by an honest and quality mechanic. Okay, let's get real. If I lived in the LA or Orange County area and if I had a Honda or an Acura, Honda Bob would be my mechanic, but instead of lounging in the comfort of my home, I'd be hanging outside harassing him just like Allison and Steve do. But unfortunately, I don't have the opportunity to have Honda Bob as my mechanic. Although I have considered moving to LA and buying a Honda or an Acura just so I could do that. If you are fortunate enough to live in Honda's Bob service area, what's your excuse? Give him a call at 562-531-2321 or email him at hdabob@aol.com. HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Well, it's time for another exciting episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchotts from BartB.ie. How you doing, Bart?
I am doing good, and I have a very, very special guest here all the way in Ireland.
How are you guys? This is Allison here. Allison Sheridan from the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeed.com.
You know, I told the chat room, I was all nervous about screwing up your intro because I knew I would never hear the end of it.
Katie, when I used to do this, I used to record the intro like 3 or 4 times to get the intonation right.
I want to make sure your voice cracks a little bit on ever so slight.
Ever so slight Macintosh.
There you go. Perfect.
And we should mention Steve is there too. Do you want to shout out, Steve?
How y'all doing there?
You're right. From the South now?
And
if anybody does want to follow our trip, you really should follow Steve on Twitter at SP Sheridan, because he's tweeting, what do you say, Bart, every 30, 40 seconds?
I don't know. Every time you look around, there's some sort of tweeting device involved.
And I guess we should mention that it's obviously a different audio setup. So you guys are all sitting around a single microphone recording in a fairly echoey room. So they're just going to have to feel. Literally, this is a kitchen table podcast.
This is a kitchen table podcast.
So. This was quite an adventure putting together. We've probably had 14 different separate audio problems that all came down to a bad splitter in the end game.
Yeah, $5 Radio Shack piece. So
Bart made me throw it away.
Good.
Bart threw it away.
Well, what surprised me more than anything is, you know, given how expensive it is to check luggage now and flying internationally, and I think you've got 43 separate flights on this trip.
Yeah, we do.
You packed 2 separate splitters. You packed one and a backup.
Well, you know, it has to do with how small it is, too. You know, these are little bitty things, and I had 2, and I figured, okay, why not have them both? I don't know if they both work, whatever. So, yeah, redundancy.
Okay, well, that's important, I guess. So, anyway, I guess since we're getting started 30 minutes late due to audio issues, we should probably jump right in.
All right, time for Security Light, Bart. What's up? Actually, I did the research this week.
Oh.
You did. Mainly because
were making us lunch.
I was making soup at the time, yeah. Okay, so the first up, we have a Mac update, security update 2010-005, which is for all Leopard and Snow Leopard users. It's a fairly chunky update. I noticed some interesting things in here, like Samba is updated, which is particularly important because that's your Windows file sharing on the Mac.
Mm.
And that flaw allows an unauthenticated remote attacker may cause a denial of service or arbitrary code execution.
Our favorite. So would that affect you even if you're never on a Windows network?
If you had Windows file sharing turned on, even if you were using it Mac to Mac, so the SMB protocol, if you had that turned on,
okay,
then you then it could affect you. And
a lot of other stuff.
An unauthenticated attacker basically means anyone.
Nice.
That's code word for anyone. So that's pretty important. The other stuff, a lot of it affects the server version of OS X. Stuff like PHP and ClamAV, but there's also core graphic stuff and a few other things. So it's worth updating.
All right.
And
do you want me to do that while we're on this Skype call?
I think that would be a great idea.
Then our friends in Microsoft have less good news for us. They've issued us with an advisory. And I'm not sure if I would have put this in the notes because I don't really think this one counts as security light.
Oh, I disobeyed, huh?
Well, you made the notes, so can't blame me. But Microsoft have discovered a flaw in how they load DLL files, and we all know that Windows is full of DLL files. And the Microsoft aren't issuing a patch for this. They're making everyone who writes apps for Windows patch their own app.
What?
Oh, because that sounds like that will get done so efficiently.
So the issue is with how DLLs get loaded. So they're saying that people who write the apps need to put in the security to make sure the DLLs aren't abused. Which is a really good way to make sure it doesn't happen. And so I imagine that this vulnerability is going to be with us for quite some time.
Or they're going to have to change their tune.
Or, well, what we're going to hear is something like, you know, attacks against X application, and then X application is going to patch itself, and then attacks against Y application, and then Y application will patch itself.
And they're all the same flaw.
It's all going to be the same DLL preloading attack. So basically the bad guy gets to shove their DLL in ahead of the real DLL and then do whatever the hell they want because they've just got a DLL of their choice into your program.
Now, surely if Microsoft had a choice, there was a way to fix it on their end, they would pick that, wouldn't they?
I don't know. I don't know the exact code and stuff involved, so it's hard to know quite what they could or couldn't have done, but the fact that they're not touching this and that they're leaving it to people to patch their own is interesting.
Yeah.
So I think this is one to watch, because not really much you can do. All you can do, I guess, is expect there to be many updates to many apps and then apply many updates to many apps. But other than that, not really much we can do on this one. Just expect to hear it talked about in the tech press, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Fine.
All right. Well, that doesn't count then.
Yeah.
My bad.
You cheated. He cheated last time you made me host your show, too.
It must be your fault then, in some way, I'm sure. Well, maybe we should switch over to talking a little bit more about the trip. So if you haven't been following us on Twitter, it's been quite an adventure. And Steve, you're definitely welcome to jump in here if you have anything to add. Our original plan was to fly from LA to Chicago, Chicago to Manchester, and then Don McAllister would pick us up there. We'd spend a lovely 3 days with he and his wife, Barbara, and then we would take a flight from Manchester to Dublin and then hang out with Bart, and then Dublin to Antwerp and hang out with Nightwise, leave out of Brussels and come back through New York, and then get home.
Yeah, but that didn't work out.
So LA to Chicago, we go to take off. They're a little bit late pulling away from the gate, but they pull out. And the plane is supposed to turn to the right, and it turns to the left. And Steve goes, uh-oh. And I said, what? There's probably runways on both sides. He says, no, I don't think so. There's only runways to the right. And I'm like, oh, come on, Steve. You can't know every runway in all of LAX. And
I love that Steve knows that.
Unfortunately. And he says, and the guy gets on, and he goes, well, we have an indicator light that says that the air conditioning system might not be working properly in the cabin. And it's too long of a flight to do that to you. So at this point, it's nice and chilly in the cabin, feels great. So we pull back, and we end up sitting there for a couple hours. The guy tells us, you know, you can leave if you want to. If you want to get off.
Where are you going
to
go?
Well, book a different flight or anything. And we're watching the clock. And finally, it's probably, we had a 2 hour and 15 minute layover in Chicago. So figure, you know, you could lose an hour and you're still fine. You can't lose 2 hours and still be
fine. Certainly not three.
No. So we ended up pulling out the iPhone, looking up alternate flights to get over to England. And for some reason, we didn't freak out.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Oddly, it's not like me not to freak out, right? So we found a flight. We called with the BlackBerry in one hand and the iPhone in the other and called American. And they booked us on a flight not to Manchester. Wait, where did it fly us in?
To London.
Oh, that's right. It flew us into Heathrow. And then a jumper flight from Heathrow over to Manchester.
Yeah. And you were clear to American when you were on the phone with them that we're stuck on the plane right this minute, checking on our iPhones and our BlackBerries, because that probably doesn't happen very often.
I guess not. Yeah. Well, now that actually screwed us up a little bit, because when we got to Chicago, the lady at the Admirals Club said, well, they've already got you booked through. In fact, you're booked through twice. And so we're okay. And I think we might have
four of you going to London.
We might have been booked on two different flights too, because one was later and one was earlier getting to London. And we thought, and I was like, well, you know, we've got the Admirals Club here in Chicago. We should just hang out here longer and take the later flight. Luckily, Steve said, no, let's just get ourselves to England. Let's just get on the first one.
So had you booked yourself on the earlier flight, or had I just wondering who was taking better care of you, you or them?
Steve, you can talk. He's shaking his head. Apparently, we booked ourselves on the earlier one.
Okay, that's what
I figured. The good news is we were able to upgrade using a ton of frequent flyer miles and a lot of cash to to business class. So that was really nice. We get on the plane. Oh, I forgot to say, on the first plane, when after they get the light fixed, they go, okay, we're just waiting for the logbook here now. Wow. Yeah, and that's like 20 minutes to
find
the logbook.
Famous last words.
Yeah, yeah. So we get over to Manchester, or to Chicago to London. We wait around in the British Air Club there, and we get on the plane, and they say, yeah, we're just looking for the logbook now. No, and this is Chicago over to there. They're looking for the logbook. They can't find the logbook again. They couldn't get fuel on the plane.
Yeah, which plane was that?
That was the one from Chicago to London. And they said, you know, you really want fuel.
That's an important one.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, there's no petrol stop halfway across the Atlantic.
So we are literally already in our seats. Everybody's luggage stowed. We got our seatbelts on when they say, we've been trying to get fuel on the plane for about an hour now.
The cap was stoked or something.
Yeah, yeah. But why did you let us on the plane if you knew you couldn't get fuel on the plane? They eventually get that going. So we lose another couple hours. But we're real happy because we're in big old reclining chairs and they're bringing us champagne and stuff. We're all right. People back in steerage were a little irritated, probably. It was getting ugly back there. So then we get over to Manchester or to London, and we spent some time making sure our luggage would follow us. But then Jane from Perth tweeted, I hope their luggage catches up with them. And that was the kiss of death. Yeah. We got on the plane and they said, we're looking for the logbook. And they ran a little bit late, but then they got us on, and of course our luggage didn't get to Don's house. Oh,
but how far did your luggage make it? Did your luggage at least make it out of the U.S.?
Yes, it had made it to London, and three out of four of them came in on a plane right behind us, but the fourth one came in a little later, and they didn't bring it to us until the afternoon of the next day.
Okay.
Oh, they wouldn't bring you three, because then they'd have to go twice.
Right. So anyway, well, we would have fought over who had underwear or something. Yeah.
Well, it would have been pretty obvious whose underwear was whose.
Yeah, that's true. So anyway, but we had a fantastic time with Don and Barbara, and went all over Liverpool and went to an Apple store, which is important. And
then, none of them over there.
You can't go to an Apple store with Don. That's dangerous.
Well, it was
how many MacMinis did you buy?
It's when we walked in and they said, hello, Mr. McAllister, that you really get worried.
Did they really?
No. But that would have been funny.
Hilarious.
And then, let's see, the next day, Gazmaz came over and took us to Wales, where we got to go to some castle. What was it, Bart?
Carnarvon.
And that was really cool. We saw lakes. We saw a castle, waterfalls. We just had a great day. So, and Barbara and Don were wonderful hosts. So that was really fun. Then we got with everybody has always told me Ryanair is the worst airline in the entire planet. And
it is.
We walked up. We got on the plane. We checked our luggage. We got on the plane. It took off early. It landed early, and they handed us our luggage,
which is pretty good. Yeah.
Which is more than an American could pull off.
So you're one for three at this point.
One
for four.
One for four.
Yeah.
Right. So
that's not good odds.
Yeah, everybody keeps asking me what day we're going to do something, and I just look at them with this blank stare. So now we're at Bart's house, and we've had a great time. Where did we go yesterday, Bart? Glendalough?
Went to the Wicklow Mountains and Glendalough, yeah. So, and the small mountains by American standards were pretty.
Yeah, it was just beautiful. Had a really great day yesterday, and today we went on a bike ride down through the lock or through the locks in the canal, and we got to shoot butterflies yesterday.
Yeah, but
photos.
Pure chance. Yeah. Yeah, I wonder what kind of rifle would you need to shoot butterflies? Probably a really good aim.
Or a shotgun. Cruelty to animals. But anyway, next we're off at the crack of dawn, or as my father would say, the crack of doom, on Monday morning.
Yeah, you're off at god awful o'clock on Monday morning.
Yeah, the flight's at 10 to 7, so we have to get up at 3.
You've been in the airport 2 hours early, and you got an hour's drive.
Well, so. See, then and that'll be about the time I'm recording the live show.
Yeah, pretty much, actually.
Yeah, Bart said he wouldn't drive in with us for some reason because he's
he'll be in the chat room.
It would be about an hour after the show's over, right at the tail end of that.
Yeah, you'll be getting, yeah. Because I'm going to stay up with you, Katie, but I'm going to stay up as little as I can because I wasn't able to get the next day off work.
Well, I'll be uploading, so before you get on the plane, make sure you download the podcast.
That's the last thing you can do on the internet in your room is download your own podcast.
Download your podcast.
You're right, right. Oh, that'll be fun to hear, though.
And it's only an hour flight to Belgium, an hour and 10 minutes, so that sounds about exactly one Oscillocast long.
No, this will be a long one.
And they might have a delay.
Well, I did have a couple of interesting tech challenges to talk about when you travel. Well, the first one of the things I did before we left was I ripped 15 movies to the iPad MacBook Air using Handbrake. If you haven't ever played with that, handbrake.de, it's a great app. You stick in a DVD, you hit, capture or whatever, and it makes it into an M4V. And it's the nice thing is the movies are only about a gig a piece.
Yeah, so, it scales them, I think, to be iDevice appropriate.
Right, but it still looks good on Steve's MacBook Air. It's a 13-inch screen, and they still look fully goodness. So that's kind of nice. So we could cram a lot of those on there. But in the end, we ended up playing Solitaire on the iPad and watching the in-flight entertainment system because the flight systems were pretty good. So one thing I found interesting, 8 days into the trip, my iPad was down to 34% power.
Oh.
So that's pretty good, I thought. But yeah, we were mostly not playing with it, so maybe that's why. No internet's on that, so.
So you've got the Wi-Fi on the iPad? I thought you had the 3G.
I have the 3G, but I'm not going to turn it on in Europe.
No, so you've turned it off. Okay.
Yeah, Katie was wondering how we were doing this without causing ourselves a house payment to go by.
Yeah, you're using my internet.
All right, we used Don's extensively. Actually, that was a funny thing when we were at Don's house and we whipped open our machines, the devices column on the left-hand side. There were seven.
Before you guys arrived.
Before we arrived. And Barbara doesn't use hers. So
how many hands does Don have? How many keyboards can you type on at once?
There is not a room in the house that doesn't have something with an Apple logo on it. I mean, the kitchen has an Apple TV on it. Or no, is that a magazine?
Okay, so what about the bathroom then? What's in there?
Yeah. Okay, maybe not in the bathroom. But the Wi-Fi signal is still good in there. So
that's important.
So I got to give Bart a hard time about the chargers. So I got on a Skype. He's already protesting. I got on a Skype video call with him, and I had the international charger kit, and I took out all the little heads that you can put on your Mac devices.
Well, because he said that's what you should buy. I remember that.
Yeah, well, I'd already bought it actually twice because we left part of the charger thing in a plane once.
Oops.
So we have an entire double set, so that was going to be good. So I held them up and I said, okay, it says this is the European charger. Is this the right one, Bart? And it had two pins on it. Bart said, yep. Now he says that I said, did it say Belgium?
He said
right?
European, and that is the European charger. That is what's going to work in the plug in Belgium.
Oh, is that what the mistake was?
Yeah,
you're not
European.
Europe?
No, we're British. We have British plugs, and in Europe they have European plugs.
Oh, so, hey, come on, this is part of British, part of
Europe. This is
Europe.
Not part of Britain.
No, I mean part of Europe.
Yeah, but we don't use European plugs. They're the round ones.
A subtlety you could have mentioned.
Sorry, that's probably lost in translation.
I have two of these beautiful UK.
They work for Nightwise.
UK and, we should
Belgian ones
get there.
For Nightwise, and then in Ireland and the UK, we have the giant mega Uber plugs.
Triangle thingies, yeah.
Yeah, with three giant big legs in them. So, we've been butchering together various plugs between what I have.
Actually, Steve tweeted a photo. What, you had four things stuck together to make it actually work in the end game? Because we've got, we travel light. We've got two Blackberries, an iPhone, an iPod Touch, a Nano, an iPad, a MacBook Air, and a MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
I think that's all.
And surely that's all, yeah.
And two splitters.
And two splitters. Well, now I only have one.
Okay.
Yeah, basically, all of my plugs for Apple stuff have got the little bit missing because Allison and Steve have them all.
You walk around his house, it's just missing. So, now, we had a lot of fun when we tried to get onto Bart's network.
Yes, because Bart believes in security.
Not just security. How big's your encryption key there, Bart?
63 characters of random alphanumeric text. Well, that's what it'd be.
Okay, so picture this, Katie. You walk into Bart's house. You're not on his network yet. How do you get that key?
Well, my guess is he's got to give it to you on a thumb drive, maybe?
Right.
Which is fine for the Macs, but what about the iPad? The iPad and the iPhone.
PaySpot?
And the BlackBerry.
One password. One password via Dropbox sync.
We're not on the network. So I finally wrestled Bart to the ground, wrapped his arm behind his back, and squeezed until he agreed to turn off his encryption for 30 seconds so we could get in, he could mail it to us, and get back out.
Oh, my gosh.
So that was oh, actually, Steve did it, and then that wasn't enough time for me to do it, so Steve set up an ad hoc network from his MacBook Air to my MacBook Pro and gave me the key, because Bart wouldn't let it be open that much longer.
That was the second day, because you didn't have the MacBook with you on the first day.
That's right, because it was a Mac. I had the iPad,
yeah,
so
you
got the iPad
first.
And then that. So I think one of the lessons to transfer here is understanding a lot about these devices lets you figure out how to get over the hurdle, you know, to eventually weave your way through. And that has never been more true than at the University of Maynooth or St. Patrick's College.
St. Patrick's College.
So we are staying at St. Patrick's College, which is a spectacular set of buildings. I mean, just stunning. I mean, what I love is Bart is still amazed by him every day that he looks at.
Well, I love working there because it's 200-year-old classic university with the big quadrangles and the beautiful old buildings.
And spires and...
Yeah, lots of churchy bits because it is a seminary.
Churchy bits. So we were surprised to hear that they actually have essentially like hotel rooms that you can stay in. You can book...
Yeah, we have a department called the Conference and Accommodation Center. So they rent out the rooms that used to be filled with priests studying for stuff, but kind of very few of those left these days.
Yeah, so we ended up getting we didn't mean to, but we ended up getting the bishop's quarters called the Dublin Rooms. And
the Pope's quarters weren't available?
The what?
The Pope's quarters weren't available?
Yeah, no, Bart wouldn't let us stay in that fancy of a room. But, I mean, we've got this huge sitting room with a fireplace and a table and four big stuffed chairs and these giant windows with, walk-in window kind of things. I don't know what you call the drapes kind of things. And then a long hallway down to a bedroom that's got a king or a queen and a double bed in it and a giant bathroom. You know, as my mother would say, if you're that kind of person, you could have a party in there. She does say that. So the good news is they have Wi-Fi in the university and or in the college. I keep getting mixed up.
That's both.
And but Bart won't let us have port 25.
It's not that you can't have port 25. It's that all you get is the internet, as in 80 and 443.
Right. So I tried to convince him to open the router up for us, but he wouldn't. So not having port 25 means you can't use an mail application. It won't.
Right.
It does, the mail protocol won't go through. So you've got to do web-based mail, right?
You couldn't. So, you don't even have the ports open for SSL. The 7 whatever.
Well, no, it's all through a web proxy. Actually, all that internet access for guests is through a web proxy. So if it doesn't go over HTTP, it isn't happening.
Hmm.
Yeah. So that's okay. I mean, because I've got webmail, you know. So I figured out what my 3 webmail addresses were and got logged in and everything. But I wanted to. One of the things I really enjoy doing when we're on vacation is to take a ton of pictures and then every couple of days send an email to this pile of people who for some reason have agreed to allow me to do this to them. About 35 people.
I don't remember agreeing, but I always get them.
Yeah, that's true. I think you have to opt out is the problem.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, I like to take a bunch of pictures and then tell the story of what we're doing as we're gone so people get little updates. The downside is that when I get back, no one wants to hear about my vacation, but I figure people don't want to anyway. And, the good news is it really irritates people to see how much fun we're having. So, you know, it's all good. But now picture this. Now I'm in podfee.com mail in Gmail, but my address book isn't in there. So I don't have those groups created. So I said, all right. So here's how I got this thing to work. Oh, the other thing is I really like to have my images in line with the story. So picture, you know, little couple sentences, picture, couple sentences, picture. So it's not too boring. Webmail doesn't do that. You can't insert them on either side of words. It's just a pile of words and a pile of photos.
As you can see in the first image, and everyone scrolls down and has a look and then scrolls back up and where was I in the text?
So annoying. So here's my 10-step process to foil this system.
Oh, dear gosh.
I created an email in the mail.app, and then I plopped in the address group, right? This group that I had of 35 people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that gave me the addresses in a window I could copy from.
Mm-hmm.
So I copied those out of there, and I tried pasting them over into Gmail, but I wasn't sure that was going to work. So I pasted them into Excel,
of course
which made
you did.
One cell. You laughing at me, Katie?
Yes, I am.
So that made one cell really, really long, right? So I needed to parse that into separate pieces. So I used the text-to-column command under data, and that gave me a row of addresses. But now I need them to be vertical next. So I did a copy of that top row, and then I pasted it down below with paste special, where you can choose the command transpose, so it became a vertical list instead of a horizontal list. You still with me?
Mm-hmm.
So each of the email addresses is a real name followed by the email address. So it would say Allison space Sheridan space left bracket Allison at podfeet.com right bracket, which is really not useful as you would plop it into an email address. You need to have it separated where it's just Allison at podfeet.com. So then I use text to columns again to get rid of the two brackets and separate the words out. So all I had was the addresses. So now I'm good. I've got those addresses. So now I can copy that and paste it into the address field in Gmail.
Mm-hmm.
But now I still don't have my pictures, text in there. So what I did next was I copied the email just as it was. I pasted it into the word processing application Bean. And then in Bean, I printed it out to a PDF, put that PDF up on iDisk, shared it out, grabbed the sharing link and pasted the link into Gmail and hit send.
Hmm. You want me to break that down into two steps for you?
Oh, no, not really. Really?
What?
There's a little button in address book in the preferences where you can sync your address book contacts to Gmail.
Oh, that's not possible.
Yeah, it really is. And
that was one of the new features in Snow Leopard.
Mm-hmm. Where? I'm looking for it.
An address book in preferences.
Address book preferences.
And then what I probably would have done is I would have gone into iWork and made a nice little newsletter and put my pictures in and, you know, PDF'd it. And yeah.
Nice little newsletter. Well, mine was a nice little...
It was a very nice PDF.
It was a very nice PDF.
A little sizey, but... Yeah.
Well, okay, so this will only sync with Gmail, but not with my podfeet.com through Google accounts, will it?
Probably
it's
will.
Gmail account?
It's a Gmail account.
Oh, I've never understood this at all. And yes, we're trying this while we're recording.
You do realize that my internets are a hell of a lot less powerful than your internets at home?
Yeah,
am I going to mess things up?
You should probably try that when we're not on Skype.
Oh,
but
probably.
Anyway, yes. I sync my address book with my I have a Gmail account. I sync that. It's pretty cool.
And it stays synced.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I bet that'll work for me, huh, Katie?
Well, you know, when I see you next month, is it next month? It's almost next month. It's next month in a little bit in Las Vegas. I'm just going to take your computer and your iPhone and your iPad until I get that fixed for you.
If you do it quickly, I'll kill myself. It better be hard.
Okay.
That will just be awful.
So
anyway, that was, I'm hoping that when I get to Nightwise's house, maybe it'll be a little bit easier, or maybe the Hotel Ambi where we're going to be staying, it'll be even easier. But that's been the extent of the excitement there.
Well, good. Well, now next time you go to visit Bart, next time you visit Bart, he'll have changed his key.
Oh, I wonder whether he will have changed his key. Yeah, he probably does. He changes it, what, weekly too?
No, not weekly. Don't be silly.
Monthly?
No, it's not quite monthly either, to be honest.
But next time you go to visit Bart, it will have changed.
Yes, I'm sure. Maybe by then I'll just rent one of those MiFis that you can stick the SIM cards into and just carry that around and save myself some.
Maybe I'll have a MiFi by the next time you're over.
Oh, that'd be fun. Well, Don had one, but he wouldn't let us use it. I don't know. The battery kept dying. That was part of it. Oh. They've got a little problem that the battery compartment's a little bit loose, so the battery will slide and suddenly stop connecting, or it won't charge.
Okay.
So, Stu had trouble with that, and so did Don. So we had our first tweet up. In where were we?
Liverpool.
Thank you. I'm getting you realize how many time zone changes we did and
yeah, you know, look, the sun's up, Allison, it's daytime.
Well, you're still in the same time zone as you were with Don, right?
Right, right.
You'll stay in the same time zone now. And well, Nightwise is in the same time zone.
No, Nightwise is not there.
Oh.
Well, you see, Allison has settled into my body clock, which means late nights and not very early mornings.
Well, let me put it this way. We were supposed to be here at 11:30 this morning, and we didn't quite make it.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, the first night we stayed up till 3, and the second night till 2.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And then when we go to Nightwise's, it's going to move in the wrong direction because he keeps normal human hours, so it's going to get rough.
But then maybe you'll be heading back to a normal direction so that when you go home, it won't be so bad.
That might help. Except it's an hour further, too.
Yeah, I was going to say it's 9 hours away from
Yeah, but they say flying west is better than flying east.
That's what they say. Well, we left at 7:30 in the morning on Friday.
Yeah, that was exhausting. I was following you guys all day. I finally had to go to bed.
With all of your different flights going wrong and having to get different flights, I mean, that must have been just exhausting anyway, no matter how many time zones it was.
Oh, yeah. Well, and we got in at 4:30 in the afternoon the following day, and we stayed up until about 11 at night talking to Don and Barbara. So they were surprised that we stayed upright.
But that was the right thing to do.
Yeah, yeah.
That bitch.
Actually, no, I'm lying. We stayed up until 1. We stayed up until 1 in the morning that first night.
Wow.
We got our second wind, evidently. Maybe it was the foot rubs in business class or something that helped. I don't know.
That doesn't sound good.
Oh, so I think that's pretty much it for our adventure. How's the show coming along?
The show's coming along pretty good. Of course, by the time they hear this, we'll already know the answer to that question.
The show will have come or
it will
or
have
not.
Come or not.
I suppose that's only interesting to us right at this exact moment in time.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. So I think it will be good. I've had lots of people talking to me about it this week. So it's something new and exciting.
Good. Cool. Well, I sure appreciate it. And this is fun of you to do chit-chat across the pond with us chit-chatting across the table.
Well, you know, we have to follow certain rules.
There has to be water involved.
There has to be a Belgian. It has to be across the Atlantic.
Actually, my son Kyle suggested that Bart and I stand on either side of a pond and Steve get a picture of us yelling at each other.
That could work, too.
So we might do this afternoon because we're about to head off on our photo walk and tweet up in the Maynooth branch.
That's right. So you do your tweet up tonight and then tomorrow you're off to see Nightwise.
No, tomorrow is one more day in Ireland.
One more day. Okay.
We plan to sleep until
noon. With a very early night so that Alison and Steve can get up at god awful o'clock in the morning.
And so it looks like we should continue to survive. We'll find out. We'll stay in touch, Katie.
And then assuming your flights back come a little better than your flights over there, you should be back in time to do the show next week.
I think so. We're supposed to come home Friday night.
We have a whole day to spare. I mean,
what can possibly go wrong? That's not too good. I think my only real disappointment, though, about Ireland has been that on Thursday night, Bart did not find us a Taco Bell.
Yeah, I tried, but no.
Did he at least make you tacos?
No.
We did go to a nice Italian restaurant.
We did. We had some fabulous Italians.
You couldn't even find a Mexican place?
What's that?
You couldn't even find a Mexican place?
No, actually.
We didn't try.
Oh. Well, no, they don't do Mexican food around here.
Okay. So.
All right, Katie. Well, thanks for pulling us in for the show. Good luck tomorrow night. I hope it all goes well.
It will be fine. And I'm sure, Alison, you wouldn't mind if... The Nocilla Castaways sent you some clips for next week's show, so you could maybe have a little respite.
That would be marvelous. I have a feeling there's not going to be much beyond possibly a review of the Blackberry Torch. I'll have that done by this trip.
So. Yeah, I've been playing with it as well.
So send your reviews for next week's shows to Alison@podfeet.com.
Right.
Right. And I'll send you whatever leftovers I may have, because I may get some extras in. We'll see.
Oh, that'd cool. Be nice. So. All right, Bart, you want to close this out?
Okie dokie. Until next time, happy computing.
Okay, well, I think that's going to wrap it up for me. I do want to say a great thanks to everybody who came and joined me on the Ustream chat room. I think we had upwards of 40 people in there at some point tonight, and I know the Emmys were also going on, so going head-to-head against the Emmys, I think that was some pretty good numbers. So thank you very much for everyone in the Ustream chat room for joining me and keeping me company. Thank you to Alison for allowing me to co-host your show while she was gone. It's been an interesting experience for someone who's done a lot of podcasts. I've never done one quite like this before, and it definitely gives me a great respect for what Alison does every week. So definitely thanks to Alison for all she does with her show. Although I want to come next year on No Silicon Part 2. So we're going to have someone else co-host the show. But other than that, anytime you need a co-host, you know, maybe once or twice a year, maybe not, you know, every week or anything like that. But thanks again to everyone for listening, and stay subscribed.